Welcome to the OCR WC podcast. For the final episode of season three, I'm joined by the wonderful Callie Schweikart. After suffering from hypothermia at World's Toughest Mudder 2022, she worked hard over the year to achieve her goal for 23. But what were those goals, and how can the psychology of what goals you set impact your performance? We go through her time at World's Toughest Mudder 23 and delve into what it's really like to run the toughest 24-hour OCR there is. Callie, welcome to the OCRWC podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's awesome to be here.
It's my pleasure. We've kind of gone back and forth a bit on organizing this. So I'm really grateful that you've taken the time to sit down with me and that we can get this done. It's not so easy scheduling.
Oh yeah, totally. Especially across continents. Is it continents, countries?
Continents, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I thought so. I'm just, geography's not my strong suit. But too. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So I met you recently, a couple of weeks ago at World's Toughest Mudder. That was my first time meeting you. And I immediately met you. I was like, I really like her. I loved your attitude. Oh. We met you before the event, kind of asking what your goals are and what you're going to do. And I loved your attitude. And you actually had a really, really fantastic weekend. And even post-weekend was glorious watching you. So should we kind of start with World's Toughest Mudder and take it from there?
Sure. Yeah. First of all, it was so great to meet you in person. I do remember chatting a bit before the race and kind of talking about goals and stuff. And I think I had come into that weekend with the mindset that I had set myself up to do something really good if things went in my favor. But you kind of know, going into any 24-hour event, there are so many variables that you can't control for. And because of the duration of the race, it's a little bit of a you swing and you hope you hit kind of thing, because there are just so many things that can go wrong that are almost out of your control. And that's been an interesting learning curve, like trying to get better at ultras. And that 24-hour distance is sometimes things just don't go the way they need to go, and there's not much you can do about it. So you have to come in with a little bit of that mindset, like, okay, these are my goals, but I am also fully aware that this could all go down the drain, which was kind of my previous experience in WTM. The first year I tried it in 2022, I went into that feeling quite fit and excited to try a new distance, a new event totally, and then got hit with hypothermia. And I mean, obviously I made choices that contributed to getting hypothermia, but like, those are things that are hard to fully prepare for.
Nutrition can go wrong as well, though.
It was cold. Yeah, it was cold and wet. Like, we were never dry. And I just, not having known what a 24-hour event is like, it's like very hard to fully prep for something like that.
Yeah.
Nutrition can go down the tubes. You can twist an ankle 2 hours in, you know, and then what? You have to suffer for 22 hours. You really just don't know. So when we had been talking about goals for this year, I think I was like cautiously optimistic. Like, yes, if things go the way I'd like them to go, I think they can go really well. And I knew that there would be some stout competition there in Chris, obviously. And then Katie was coming back, which was kind of like a last minute thing. We weren't sure. She and I are good friends and we live very close by. So like for a while it was like, oh yeah, she's not doing it. And then she decided like the week up to do it. I was like, okay, great. Another one to worry about. And then Hannah Carta is always someone who's like steady and chugs along in this race. And then you had like Stephanie, third place, Stephanie Bland.
Stephanie Bland, yeah.
I didn't know who she was. I didn't know she should be on the radar, and she crushed it. So I was just acknowledging the fact that like there's definitely some solid competition, and yeah, maybe podium is a good goal, but at the same time, I try not to focus too much on just placement, because you really can only control for your own effort. So that's what's cool about WTM too, is like there's that distance goal that you can shoot for too. So regardless of what anyone else is doing, a lot of people go out and say like, I want 15 laps, I want 10 laps. And that's awesome, because it's a much more self-oriented goal.
Yes.
I didn't necessarily have that either, because like it's hard.
It's so difficult. I mean, obviously I've never run World's Toughest Mudder, but having watched it this year, 23 was drier, warmer, and yet the mileage was lower.
And so it's very difficult to predict. So you could say, oh, I want 100 miles, but you don't really know what people are going to be getting until they're doing the course. And also,
Exactly.
I don't mind the idea of kind of going with a placement oriented goal, because it's kind of like, well, I want to be in the top three. Cool. That's that, because you don't know what
Yeah.
mileage is going to be necessary. You can say, I want to get over 85 or something. And I don't know. I get not wanting to focus on other people for what your goal is, but there are so many variables. Unless you just
Absolutely.
say, I want to run for 24 hours. I don't know.
And that's kind of, I had to balance process and outcome goals. And like, I as someone who's struggled with a good bit of performance anxiety, and like, it does put a lot of pressure on myself. It's good to acknowledge what the different types of goals are. So like, outcome goals completely focus on results. Like, in a perfect world, I went in like, I want to win this thing. And like, that's in the back of my mind. But if I set my entire race on that, I'm almost setting myself up for failure, because one, that's a very tall task, but two, everything, any little mistake, any little setback starts it, like, I personally kind of start to crumble under that pressure if all I'm focusing on is winning. And that's a miserable way to race a 24-hour race. Like, you don't
It's a
want to just
long
be like,
time.
yeah. And so my outcome goals were, top goal was to win if I could. Next goal behind that was to podium. And then I did want to just beat my mileage from the year prior, which was 70 miles, because I had to stop in the middle of the night. And I was thinking like 85 to 90 would be a really cool mileage goal to shoot for. But then process goals were continue moving for the full 24 hours, because that was something I didn't manage to do last year. To not get hypothermia was another one, just be smarter about my layers and everything. And honestly, just like, put forth an effort that I could be proud of. So whatever that meant, that's kind of like your baseline goal, that okay, if I did that, I can at least walk away proud of
Fulfilled,
something.
yeah.
Even though like, that's, yeah, it's not like my full, like, that's not what I came here to do exactly, but I can at least kind of hang my hat on that if I need to. So I tried to balance those out, because I was very excited about it all. And like, I was confident that I could be capable of doing some cool things, but like, you really just never know. A lot has to go your way. So.
It really does. I like the idea though of mixed goals, because I mean, we try and ask a few people before the event what their goals are, and nobody will ever give a solid answer, just so you know. Like,
It's hard.
nobody's gonna say, I want to do 105 miles. Oh, well, no, people have said that, but it's rare, shall we say. This year, nobody said that. There was kind of hints, so I have a goal number in mind, you know, maybe it's this, but no solid words. And some were, I guess you would call this a process goal. I really like Tyler Vierman's goal, which was he wanted to get to the hard place and get past it. Would
I
that be
like
a
that.
process
Oh, that's,
goal?
oh yeah, totally. 'Cause it's like more internally controlled and motivated, versus like, externally, you're just, oh, I want to beat this person. I want to place this. You have no control over what your opponent's going to do and who your opponents are. So all of those outcome goals are harder to, they're just a lot more pressure to put on yourself when you can't control for them. So it's like, sports psychology wise, it's not usually the best strategy, just because you're just putting a lot of pressure on yourself when, it's like worrying about anything you can't control. Like, they say that's pointless, right? And outcome goals are usually that.
Is it a different type of person that reacts to the different goals, or is that a general thing? Because I don't know, it's making me think of kind of like a way in towards people, if that, if you know, but it, I'm not sure how this works in sports psychology. Like, would the different types of goals work for different people, or is this always a bit iffy?
I mean, I feel like you see completely different athletes respond differently to those things. I'm not one, I'm not going to put words in her mouth, but from what I've observed, like a Chris Roglowski, for example, she strikes me as someone who's extremely confident, and rightfully so. Like, and she's like, she's been someone to be like, I'm going for 105 miles, I'm going for 110 miles. And she seems to be someone who could respond to an outcome goal better than maybe myself, who's, I don't know, I've never, I don't like to put those hard, I don't know, hard, goals on things, those hard, like, targets, because I don't know, I'm someone who comes from a place of a little more like I don't want to put that pressure on myself kind of thing. So I think it does vary person by person a little bit,
Okay.
and just confidence in general, and how you respond. Like, some people respond to negative reinforcement, some people respond to positive reinforcement. I'm someone who, like, I prefer a lot more positivity and, like, taking pressure off of myself than a lot of people enjoy having pressure put on them. So I think it does depend. I'm definitely just someone who gears towards the process goals.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I mean, there are so many different theories when you speak to people about what goals are. You know, some people say, well, if your goal is, I don't know, let's say you're doing a marathon and your goal is to do it in 3 hours. And nope, that doesn't work. Let's stick with the world's toughest mudder. So, say, you know, your goal is 70 miles and you could do 70 miles, and then your body could be like, well, I gave you 70 miles. I'm not going to give you any more. So, a goal could be almost limiting, but then there could be the other option of, well, I want to do 75 miles. If you got to 3 a.m. and thought, the maths isn't really adding up, I'm not going to get 75 miles, another type of person could just quit.
Yeah,
So, it's,
it's
yeah.
yeah, you have to know how you respond to certain things.
And you don't know until you do it and try so many times.
Very true. Yeah, especially in a race like this where, like, emotions are all over the place, your brain goes to some fuzzy places. So
Yeah.
it's trial and error, a lot of it, for sure.
I talk about where your brain goes. Obstacle Racing Media did a film, not this year, last year, of World's Toughest Mudder, which was very good. And it kind of, for me, really highlighted the difficulty of the race in the middle of the night. It was kind of the lack of audio over the top. So you could just hear like the wind and the rain and the squeaking of neoprene. And it really kind of hit home for me. This is a really tough event where people are really by themselves for hours and hours, which most of us will never experience what that feels like. But what kind of places does your mind go to? What is that like?
Yeah, I think I was fortunate in that because of the quote unquote failure that 2022 was for me, I was more just stoked to get to the night and through the night this year because I
Okay.
had not managed to do that last year. So 2022, I had to stop when I got too cold, I think around 2 a.m. and it
Oof.
wasn't maybe 3 a.m. and it wasn't until I could get back out there around 6 or so. If I remember, I don't remember timelines quite well.
No.
Everything was fuzzy.
I get that.
But so I think having that mindset coming into this year was a privilege in that the dark was exciting because I hadn't been through it all.
That's a
And
great way to
then,
approach it.
yeah, so that I think that helped me a ton because I know, like, I've heard from so many people, so many veterans who have done this race so many times, that getting through the night is basically the hardest part. You just have to get till the sun is coming up. And I think, first of all, well, I guess second of all, because I just said the first of all, but the other part that helped was that this was a warmer year. So when we started the race, I hit a low. My first low was probably like 4 or 5 hours in when it was so hot and my stomach was not cooperating. And I was like, how am I supposed to do this for 20 more hours? I feel awful in this heat. And
20 more out,
yeah,
20
that was scary to think about.
more hours.
Yes. So that almost like made the night feel better because it finally started cooling off. And I was like, okay, you made it through the heat, you can make it through the dark. Heat is not my strong suit. The dark was almost invigorating at first. Everyone puts their headlamps on. It's like mysterious. And then yeah, it gets depressing. It's like dank and like you're tired and you want to go to bed. But one specific thing I noticed that was very motivating to me was actually watching the moon's progress in the sky. This was really weird. Like I didn't think about this going into the race, but first of all, we were given this like incredible sunset that was super cool, and
It
then
was
it was
amazing. It
gorgeous. Oh
was
my God, it
so
was so
gorgeous.
bright. Yeah,
It was
and that was
beautiful.
awesome. And then I was like, oh, okay, night's coming, this is cool. And then it got really dark, but then as the as you made progress in the early morning hours, you could see the how would it work, and the moon got lower in as the sun came up. And just
New.
watching it change a little bit, I was like, oh, okay, so we are making progress. Like, time is passing. This is pretty cool. So I tried to focus on that when I got a little overwhelmed by the fact that it was still dark outside. And then all of a sudden, we started getting that little glimpse of the sunrise. And
And
then
once the
before you know
sunrise
it, it's like,
comes,
oh, yeah, that
it's
was super cool.
11 a.m. and boiling hot.
Yeah, oh my
Somehow it
gosh.
goes from
Yeah.
5 a.m. to 11 a.m. very quickly.
I had one lap. It was luckily overnight, like most of us, or I'm sure a lot of people did wear full wetsuits. I personally went with a short sleeve wetsuit top and a windbreaker overnight because it would stayed warm enough.
It did.
And after, like, it all it took was one lap once the sun was up, and I needed everything off. It was so hot again. So it's very interesting how that changes fast, and you have to
I
like
mean,
stay on top of it.
it was completely different. And I mean, in terms of location, it was Alabama last year. So I would think that would be pretty hot. You know, it's not like we went
Yeah.
from like north of the states down to
No.
Texas.
No.
But yeah, last year, I remember commenting it a lot during the night this year. What are people going to do with their wetsuits? Because last year it was so cold, so it's like, do they put them on early? And even that, then okay, you're going to heat. That's a really big risk. A lot of people who
Totally.
were running and you know going at the speeds you were going weren't really neoprening up. And I'm sure you remember
Yes.
Chris finishing in 22 when she was walking around eating the pizza, and that was like her last lap, and she looked like a diver in all the gear she was wearing. And this year, I
Yeah.
don't know if she put any neoprene on, to be honest.
It was totally different. And I did go in telling my crew, I was like, don't let me try to convince you that I don't need layers on.
Oh
Because that
no.
was my mistake last year, or the first year. I was like, I'm good in the cold. I got confident and then overconfident and then suffered. So we definitely had a plan of like, okay, you're still putting on layers earlier than you think you should, and then we'll adjust from there. So at least start with this. If you think you need more, we'll put this on. It ended up being where we started with the short sleeve windbreak, the short sleeve wetsuit top and the windbreaker, and I felt very comfortable throughout the whole night. Basically, there was one or two moments like going into the ice water where I was like, I kind of want another layer, but otherwise, like, it was drier, like the climate was drier than Alabama, so we dried off a little quickly. And I don't think there was as much water on the course itself. Like,
Yeah,
we had a lot of
and
water obstacles, but
with Liberty was taken out, so you didn't have that whole stretch of water.
that's very true.
And also I'd been kind of worried because I really suck at moderating my body temperature. So I'd been worried if I had been running the race, which I hadn't, but obviously, you know. Because I overheat very, very quickly, but I get cold very quickly. So I was like, I know this race I would struggle. And I'm used to British racing where it's just cold all the time.
Right, yeah.
I know in this circumstance, I would personally struggle. And I'm sure a lot of people are the same. Well, I'll overheat running, then I'll get wet. And it was windy and quite open. So it's like that wind and the openness is gonna would absolutely cut through me. And I would have got really cold. But then as soon as the sun went down, the wind disappeared. There was no wind overnight. And then as the
It
sun
was
came
so
up, it
calm.
picked up again. So I was like, well, actually, this is what I'd been worried about. Like that wind in the dark, people were, after having got quite hot during, I mean, hot. I have tan lines still from that weekend. It was hot.
It was
But yeah,
hot.
it really like the weather gods kind of, you know, smile down on everyone, I think.
And yeah, that's like one of the things that you really can't control for in a race like this. Like, obviously weather affects any race, but the longer you're out there, the more you're prone to be exposed to different types of weather. And we just got lucky with that. There were never, besides like the heat of the day that was very hot, like there weren't too many extremes that like took a lot of people out. I think my crew and my coach Ian, who's part of the crew, were very, they know me and they know I don't do well in heat. So they were like, okay, these couple laps are about regulating your body temperature. You're not pushing hard right now. Like, you need to get through this point before you can do anything else, because you will pay for it later if you push too hard now.
You just wouldn't
So
think
as
that
long
would
as
be
you're
the hard
aware.
part, would you?
No, yeah. But I'm overall, like, I can't complain about the conditions we got. Like, I think overall it was a good year. Like, you hear some nightmare years, like Atlanta 28, I think everything froze over. So I'll take this, I think.
And again, that's the thing. It was really, really nice weather, but then the course itself proved to be really tricky, and the mileage was lower than what we'd seen the year before. So, like I say, there are so many variables constantly. It is really difficult to compare year on year because they are totally different. Even weekend on weekend would be different, but year on year in different location, different course. We had the penalties this year, the penalty loops, which were,
I feel like I walked away from that, from this past year, this the 2023 race, wondering if that kind of race that I put out would have gotten me an orange jacket last year, like in 20, because I ran close to 110 miles total. But it like I only had 90 official because I did so many penalties. And I think Chris was the same. Because she also got 90, and she said she was failing a good bit of things. And yeah, I won. It's very hard to compare, but I do remember in Alabama in 2022 feeling like the penalty loops were very short, and I did a lot of those too, but my actual mileage was like 74 when I hit 70 miles versus like when I hit 70 miles on this course, I was at like 82
How does that
miles.
feel to know, like, I'm at this, but re in real life, this is where I am?
It, I mean, first of all, I had never run 100 miles before, so I was just stoked that I covered that distance.
Valid.
So super excited about that. And obviously, like, there's no way to know for sure. So I'm not claiming that like I deserve an orange jacket. That's not what I'm saying. But it was more like, oh man, like I wonder if things had been different or if we were given a course more like Alabama with the penalties, like what is possible? And then that just gets me excited about what's possible for the
The
future.
future.
Like maybe
Yeah,
that's
what
something to
can
shoot
I
for.
do?
Yeah,
I
maybe
mean, the
that's not
difference
so out
between
of reach.
your performance in 22 and 23 is, I mean, they're miles apart. I mean, literally.
Yeah,
Do you know what I mean? Like,
literally,
it's
yeah.
another world, the progression in a year. So what are you gonna do? That's the thing. That is the exciting thing. And I'm not hearing it as a, oh well, if this hadn't, I could have, kind of annoyedness. It's,
Okay, good.
oh,
Good.
what can I do? Like, I could
Yeah,
do
it just gets me
this.
excited.
What can I
Like,
do?
I went into this race. First of all, I didn't know that. I knew usually the winning female is covering 85 or more in like previous years. Obviously, Chris hit 100 the year prior. Like, she's raised the bar, but like 85 to 90 is like that winning range for most courses. And then, so to me, I never really had the goal or like the mindset that, oh, I'm going for that orange blazer, you know. But then after the mileage we covered this year, like that's something in the back of my brain for next time. Like, I would love for that to be a goal if I'm feeling fit and like the course lends itself to it. It doesn't seem impossible anymore, which is really cool. I am still so stoked to be one of five women to have ever hit 90. Like, that was,
I mean,
I
that's
didn't realize that was a stat, but like, I
it's
was so
such a
excited.
huge achievement. I think Chris getting 100, and we were talking this year, is she going to get 95? Because she'll be the first woman to get 95. Because the
Oh,
100 was
interesting.
such a big milestone that, in a way, it kind of put a little bit of a shadow on the incredible amount of 90 miles. And yeah, you're right. That is a th there's not many women that have done that. That's an amazing accomplishment.
Thank you. I didn't know. Well, first of all, my crew made me go out for that 90th, well, like the 90-mile lap, without telling me that I didn't need to get second, which I, in the end, I'm very grateful that they did that. My coach Ian thought I was going to be extremely mad once I found that out, but I mean, I was tired, yeah, but how could I be mad that they pushed me to hit
To get 90, yeah.
this mark
Well,
that
that's what you have a
I didn't know was
coach for,
possible?
and you have a crew for.
Exactly. And he had asked my permission the night prior. He was like, do I have your permission to put you in a dark place? And I was like, you do. Yes. So like, do what you need to do. He did. But I'm so grateful that I had a crew that believed in me, first of all, and kind of they just motivated me to be better. It was hard not to go out lap after lap for them. And now looking back, I'm like, thank goodness they did what they did, because I was also told this was the first time two women had ever hit 90 in the same race, which I think is so
Oh, I
cool. I
didn't
feel like it
know
was like
that. That's
a fun
awesome.
battle. And then just to be a part of that like 90 mile club with like four other women who are like the strongest in the sport, you know, I'm like, wow, it's an honor. So I'm
Yeah.
stoked about it.
It's amazing. It was.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm not gonna lie. So the when was it? Where the bar crawl is on the Monday. Me and Will. So Will, who was on the OTR report, we're together. Like, we get really overexcited during the race about what's going on. None of it probably makes sense if you watch afterwards, but there with numbers and pieces of paper and throwing stupid ideas around, keeping ourselves entertained. But we just had a moment where we're like, could she have got 95? And we got really excited for the results, and we're like, oh, close, but no bit. Like, we got so excited because when Chris came in as well, And I was very, very surprised. And this is absolutely no criticism of Chris, and I hope it doesn't come across that way. I think she's incredible. But I was surprised when she very quickly stopped. So it's like, she's got time for it. She'd come in with time to get another lap. She could do it. And she kind of, I think what happened and what I heard was, what I heard someone say was, she said, do I have to do another lap? As in, she kind of knew that you were on her tail, and she was a bit worried, which must feel pretty darn good. But when she knew she didn't have to, I mean, she has been running again this year so much. She's done so much. Yeah. And she doesn't have to do anything more than she did or needs to. And again, this is no criticism of her. I was just surprised because I was like, it's a different Chris. And I actually appreciate that a lot. I appreciate the kind of knowing when it's right to do what's right for you, but I'd not seen her that worried before.
I kind of take pride in saying that, like, I made Chris a little nervous because, like, she's clearly, like, she was the one to beat coming into this. And I, like, to just have pushed her in the way that I think I did, like, just based on how my crew was telling me what was going down and just the fact that, I was closer than I think people expected. I was just happy to have put in that effort and, like, been kind of around, you know, just lurking on the back of her mind. Cause, she's extremely tough to beat. She's a phenomenal athlete. So, to just have possibly pushed her a bit is really cool. Yeah. And I had no idea across the finish line that she was only at, not only at 90, but, like, when I crossed the line,
she was on the same mileage as you. Yeah.
She came over and was very congratulatory, gave me a huge hug, and I was like, oh my god, like, how'd you do? I'm expecting her to say like 105, whatever, and she said 90, and I was like, oh my gosh, me too. So I was thrilled with the fact that I felt like I put in my best effort to almost keep up, so I was happy about it for sure.
So when you're talking about this, it's interesting again because it makes me think back to what you were saying about the different types of goals. And it's kind of like, where were my thoughts going? If you had no idea, if you were running that race on your own entirely without anyone around, not you, one, if one was running that totally solo, even without any mile markers, how would that impact how many laps, you know, you got pushed to do an extra lap because you got to 90 miles. Would you have been pushed to do that extra lap, or would they just gone, go for it? If there was nobody, if there was no indication of who's near you, who's running near you, what the competition is going to be like, It all works together, doesn't it? Like, you have to, those things have to play in. Otherwise, how do you measure, especially when something is such a mental challenge? I imagine there are some dark points where you're just like, I can't do anymore. But knowing the statistics and what's going on make you go, actually, no, this is where I am and this is what I can do.
Absolutely. So there's definitely a layer of that. Like, it's virtually impossible to run your race completely in a bubble, right? Like, I did my best, and I think I would like to think I did a good job of really staying within my zone for the most part. Like, the first, because I think Chris ended up, I was leading for almost all of the first 47 miles, and that was not a, I want to be in front, I want to be beating Chris, I want to be beating Stephanie, Katie, Hannah, so and so. It was more, this feels good to me and I'm going to see how long I can keep it up. And if I get past, I get past. And that's what ended up happening. And then after that, it wasn't, oh my gosh, I'm going to like race my butt off to stick with Chris. It was more like, I need to keep chugging along and doing what I'm doing because blowing up is going to be worse. And then getting disheartened and slowing down is also not going to help. But what was interesting was on that last lap that my crew made me go out on, I also did not know that, actually, I already said that I didn't know I had second locked up. I didn't know how far ahead Chris was, but I assumed that it was more just about, okay, keep second or third. And when I went out on the lap, I saw Stephanie and she was in front of me after, I think she used a band on an obstacle that I took the penalty loop on. So she passed me while I was going on the penalty loop and I saw you that and I was like, oh my gosh, I just lost on this last lap. So I the lap prior to that was my lowest point of the race. I was like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And then all of a sudden I see Stephanie, I'm thinking she passed me and there's another deer there. And I run to catch her. And then I've told this story before, but I'm trying to play it all casual. Like, she's so sweet too. We had chatted throughout the race prior. Like, Stephanie, how's it going? Like, how you feeling? What mile are you on? Where she is. Cause if she said 90, I would have lost it. She said she was going for mile 85. And then I was like, oh, okay, I can relax. And then part of me started to panic and was like, what if she's lying to me? What if this is a game? Or like, what if I miscounted my laps? What if I'm on 85 too? And then all of a sudden I could go faster. So there's definitely that mental component of like, when you need to put more on the line, you can most of the time. And I was very like, my last lap was my fastest lap since lap 9.
Yeah.
So like, and obviously there are like bands come into play. I only use one more band, I think, than in any other lap, but it's just, it's crazy what your body can do when your mind tells you, okay, like you need to put it in gear.
It is. I do love watching the lap times throughout the night, because obviously first lap fastest, and then they kind of drop off by a few minutes each lap. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can kind of look at patterns in people's laps, and some are a bit erratic and some are pretty steady with their kind of, and then it gets to like 3, 4, 5 a.m. and then suddenly they start going up again, and you're like, how fast are these laps gonna get? What's gonna happen here? And I mean, again, I've not done it, but I can only imagine it's almost like that being able to lift a car when you have to. Sometimes you need, your body needs another message to come in to be able to do something. And to be perfectly honest, talking about mileage, I mean, I'm sitting in a chair all weekend and I get confused over the mileage. So running it, I'd be like, I don't know.
And I'm also, I'm like I'm a math tutor by profession.
Oh, right. Okay. So you should be okay with the numbers.
I should be, you'd think, but you know, 23, 24 hours in, I'm like thinking, okay, is 18 times 5 90? Am I on my 18th lap? What's 17 times 5? Like, I was struggling so bad. So I just didn't know. And because of that panic and not wanting to lose everything I had raced for in that last lap, there was something in me that like switched. And it's a cool place to access, for sure. It kind of shows you like, okay, whenever I'm feeling like I can't give anymore, I probably can. But you have to reserve that for it'll only come out when you really want something, obviously. So it's kind of hard to access that without like the proper motivation, and in that case I had it. So
it's crazy that there's more of us locked away in our brain that we can't get to.
It's really strange. Like,
and that'll be true for everyone. That's the case for everyone. Like, there's always that little bit there that what did I read the other day? That apparently we have the strength within us, like, to throw, when we throw a ball, just to like literally rip ourselves limb from limb, but our brain stops us from doing it so that we don't destroy ourselves. So, like, there's so much that's locked away.
Totally,
we don't get there. Yeah, it was interesting watching you. So obviously, like, the men as well had some huge changes going from you know, the kind of the wee hours up until the end. And I was like, I've got these pages of notes that are ridiculous, kind of like with people's times at different obstacles. And I think remember as getting to a point with you and Will asking me, is like, is there any chance she's not going to take second? And I was like, no, I'm going to stop obsessively looking at these timings, because it's not going to happen. Like, I'm completely mistaken, it's not going to happen that you don't get second. It was really interesting. It's when that moment happens, you're like, ooh, now what happens? Are you going to, like, what next?
And I think my Ian was very adamant about me not looking at the scoreboard whenever possible, but I would try to sneak a peek every lap because I like to know a general idea of where I am. I didn't want to be like anal about it and like, oh my gosh, she's on my tail, or oh my gosh, I need to do this in order to catch up. But I had a general idea of where I was throughout the race, but it was when it came down to like the end point, it was interesting to not know. And just, I fully trusted in my crew at that point, to be honest. I was just like, I will do what you tell me to do. Just give me some direction and I'm just going to finish this out because I'm so tired. I don't even want to put up a fight. just whatever happens, I trust you. I leave it all to you. Mm. And they were amazing with guiding me through that and kind of like giving me the coaching, the advice, the saying what I needed to hear. They knew they kind of just seemed to know how my brain works and just what would motivate me, what would keep me going versus like what would make me panic, what would make me shut down, that kind of thing. So that was huge, because the right crew makes all the difference. Like, I couldn't have someone being like, you need to pick it up, go faster, otherwise you're going to lose it. Like, I would freak out if someone started talking to me like that. But some people like that. Mm-hmm. So it's very important to have a crew who knows you and like believes in you and gets you.
Mm. There are people that will kind of do it without a pit crew. They'll do it solo. I don't know how. I think I would need support. And I know I'm very particular in terms of encouragement. And with me, it's totally stupid. It's say, I remember the first time I noticed it, I was at a Spartan race and my sister was watching and I was climbing a rope and I got nearly to the top. And I think, yeah, well, I think it was my sister. And she started encouraging me and like, you can do it. And I was like, that message just makes me think I'm not doing it.
Interesting. Yeah,
And
I can see how
so
that
I
could be taken that way.
and it kind of didn't help me. So I've kind of had to be like, please don't talk to me like that because it makes me feel like it appears like I'm struggling and I need encouragement over I'm just doing it and going, yeah.
That's so fascinating how brains interpret things differently. I think thinking to anyone who did it without a pit crew, I just know that my motivation to finish each lap was to see these familiar faces that like uplifted me. So it was my boyfriend Andrew and my coach Ian, and then when Chris Mendoza dropped out of the race, he started crewing for
Oh,
me.
nice.
And then Katie, same thing. Once she stopped, she was there. My friend Vivian came. She lives in Texas, and Vivian Tefuto, and she was there. It was just like, and Katie's boyfriend Ben, like all these people who coming through every lap. I was just so excited to get to the end of the lap to see them, because every time it would be such a big boost. So to not have that, like I have no idea what would have happened, but it wouldn't be good. Like my motivation for getting through, like particularly lap 17, was to get to see like where Andrew would come at this checkpoint, like a mile from the finish line, and just see him and like just vent to him for a second and be like, I cannot do this anymore. Like, please save me. Meanwhile, they made me go back out again, but at least it was like this little bit of reprieve for a second that like was so desperately needed every single time, probably past like lap five.
It must be quite a relief. Again, I'm reaching here, but this is what makes me think when you talk. You're putting so much into running. Like it's taking so much mind power, it's taking so much physical power to kind of get to the pit and just be like, okay, now you guys take over for a few minutes. Just
Exactly.
you
It's so
just do it.
nice.
Yeah.
They literally would just like shove ramen. So basically our plan was like I would come around to the mile four-ish marker of the 5 mile lap, and Andrew would be there to ask what I wanted, what I like needed, and then he'd run back,
I
and by the
love
time I
that.
came to the pit, they had everything out. So like my ramen was ready, my windbreaker was ready, they were ready to take it off when they knew it was getting too hot. They had my vest ready to switch out. Like it was totally mindless from that regard, for like in that regard. So that was a huge load off, because like I
Yeah.
don't really have to think that much. And at that point, there comes a point in the race where they probably know better than you do what you need, especially like Ian being an experienced endurance athlete, Chris having run this race multiple times and won it. Like they both probably knew better in the moment sometimes than I did what I needed. And to be able to trust them fully with that was
It's
so
huge.
huge. It's like such a, it saves so much brain space, it saves so much energy. So that was like absolutely clutch for sure.
Love that. Love that. So the difference between 22 and 23, obviously you said that you got hypothermia and the weather played a big factor. Were there any other things? Because I mean, in my head, I was going, it's such a huge progression in terms of mileage. Like, how did you build so much in a year? But then I was thinking, well, actually, there was the hypothermia. But
I
was
think,
there other progression as well that I
yeah,
mean,
I
if so,
think,
how do you do? I mean, a year isn't a long period of time, actually.
I think one was having the experience of the year prior just to inform my decisions for this year. I definitely put in, I worked really hard in my training. I won't discount that for myself. Like, I'm really proud of what I put in that full year. And under the guidance of my coach, Ian, like, we really progressed it to a point where I was so much more confident in my fitness. And like, yeah, I worked hard, and this was the main goal. I was very much focused on big endurance blocks and leading up to WTM. What are we doing here to be better for WTM basically all year? So being dedicated to that event almost fully was pretty huge. And I think that was a confidence boost. And it's also interesting, I don't know if you listen to other podcasts at all or anything in the sport, but are you familiar with Race Brain by chance?
Yeah,
Okay,
I know this
so
guy's.
I was listening to one of the episodes they had on like the WTM draft. And Bracken, who's a good friend of mine, and he's awesome.
He's fantastic.
He, yeah, they, who, someone drafted me for WTM, and he goes, "Well, you know, like she's in a relationship now. That could be the X factor. That could be a problem. Maybe she's distracted." I was like, first of all, I didn't expect that to come up at all. But I do think, reflecting back on it, having met someone like Andrew, he's amazing, and I feel like kind of filling that piece of the puzzle in my life, and having someone who's so supportive and so like he was so into crewing and like supporting me here, and just having someone who believes me like that also helps. Like being content in that aspect of my life, and just having that to draw from, especially when things got tough during the race, is like definitely a big difference that I think was a factor for sure, in a positive way. But physically, I think it was mostly like just putting in really hard focused training and a lot of it.
Really doing the
Yeah, pretty much. Those are the biggest differences, I think. Plus, yeah, just the experience from having a year under your belt. So I think that all like kind of came together to lead to a pretty dramatic improvement, I guess.
It's interesting what you say about your partner. I mean, I love what you said about coming to meet you at mile four to check what you needed and make sure you have that. But I mean, I know other people who run ultras whose partners crew for them. I mean, you always see after when Lindsay and Ryan are racing, as soon as Ryan finishes, he goes out to support Lindsay. Like when there's that mutual support within sports, like it's really nice. And when you have that kind of safety and vulnerability with someone, it's almost like in that moment where things are really hard, I imagine again, I'm kind of, keep doing this, but it must feel so safe in such a kind of scary spot to just go, you know me, I just need to kind of, even if it's just for 10, 30 seconds, just like, oh, just hold my emotions for me for a second, and I trust you.
Totally. Yeah, and I think at all of my crew, like it goes, I say, when I say this, it applies to pretty much all of them, in that to have someone there who is dedicating this 24 plus hours to you means more than you could ever explain, I feel like. And whether it was Andrew or Ian or Chris or whatever, it's just the fact that these people were here doing this for me was so like beyond motivating. You know, like how could you let them down, when all you can just see it in their eyes that all they want is for you to achieve your goals. There's not there's I feel like there's almost nothing more motivating than that. So that's a huge factor, and that's also why I'm like, oh my gosh, whoever does this without a crew is like ridiculous.
I know.
Because it's huge. It's
It's
just amazing to
huge.
have people who invest in you like that, and believe in you like that. So that's a game changer for sure.
Absolutely. And it's the pit crew is such a big task, like you say. Anytime you see anyone at any ultra pitting for someone or supporting someone, you're like, yeah, it's hard in a way. I've sometimes looked at pit crews and, for example, I don't find it difficult to stay up throughout the night at World Toughest Mudder because I'm talking constantly. But we had one
That's
short
impressive.
period where I mean, but I'm entertained. If you don't like, my mind's busy, so I don't need to. We had one short period where Jason went out into the pit and was interviewing people, so we were silent so that we could hear his audio. I was just like, oh my God, I'm dying. I'm dying with nothing to focus on right now. I am struggling to stay awake. And that's not been my problem before because I've been busy. I thought it must be really tough for the pit crew because
Oh my gosh.
you don't know what's going to happen with your athlete. You don't know when they're going to come in. If you lose focus for a short while, you could misinterpret when they're going to come in and not be prepared. So it's kind of almost, it feels like it always be on the edge, but without enough to focus on to keep you alert.
I think it's so impressive, like the reward for them. I mean, if they're a part of an athlete's success, I guess that's a reward, but they're not getting they're
No.
not reaping the reward themselves. They're not achieving these mileage goals, and that's like that's like a big factor for the athlete. So like to have to do all this work to not achieve a result, really.
It's like we
They're
don't
really
know
just there
the
for
sorry, I was just gonna say, it's like we don't
no,
know
it's
the
okay.
band name members of Taylor Swift's band, but we know you can't do it without them. All we know is that name. Like,
It's
they
so
don't get
true.
listed underneath the winner.
No, and honestly, like they it's I have the whole reason I got into this 24 hour I was interested in it was because I crewed for Raya at Telluride in
Wow.
2021. And crewing is hard. Like my body felt more wrecked, I think, after that. Like from standing for so long to sleeping on the ground in like a dry robe in Colorado in October. Like all these things that like you're not getting any reward for this, and you're just there and you're awake for 24 hours and you're hungry and you're tired and you're trying to focus and you can't. Like it's very difficult. So it's impressive. And I was just so blown away with how my crew handled it. They seemed to all like kind of feed off each other. And like Ian had more of like the sports psych coaching goal, and Andrew was more of the logistics and like making sure every like flasks were ready and like the snacks I needed were ready. Chris usually handled my like if I was to take Advil or like because you have to be careful about that and you don't want to take a lot of it. So and he's pretty familiar with all that being like a dental anesthesiologist. So he was someone I could trust with that. And like he also just gave me sound race advice because he's done this race so many times. So they all like
It
complemented
really was
each
a
other in a way
dream
that worked out
crew.
well. Honestly, yeah, I was so lucky. I would absolutely pick that crew 1,000 times over.
Love that.
It was awesome.
Amazing. We don't have much time left, so I'm not going to keep you for much longer. But the other
Yeah,
thing
no
that I wanted to
worries.
mention, even though it's not really got anything to do with the race, but I feel like all of the kind of ancillary events are such a huge part of World's Toughest Mudder. They're so enjoyable. And I said this on my last podcast, but I don't care. I'm going to say it again. Like, I love the community. I love how those things which are, either side and so much fun are community driven, and it's really nice. And one thing that stuck with me after the weekend, which I'm sure you already know what I'm gonna say, was
I
when
think I
we were at
do.
the bar crawl, and we were at a really, really nice venue, with the outside
It was
bar,
really
but
cute,
it was
yeah.
gorgeous, wasn't it? And like lights everywhere, and there'd been a band on the open air stage, and then Katie, I think it was, went up and chatted to them. We looked up like, what's going on here? And then before
Oh
we
my
knew it,
God.
you were up there with, I'm not sure who was playing guitar and putting on a little impromptu show. And it was so lovely.
Well, thank you. That was absolutely a highlight of the weekend. It was one of those moments that I was up on the stage, and sometimes it's hard to be present just in general in life. At least I find it to be. But sometimes something is so special that you're like all you're focusing on is soaking it in, and you're just so grateful for this, like, how did I get here kind of thing. And I just remember Katie and my friend Leia, who also ran the race, and they're two of my closest friends here. They casually were just like, oh, it'd be cool if like you and Chris Mendoza got up and like sang something. I'm like, oh yeah, haha, very funny. And then all of a sudden Katie and Leia had finagled us some stage time. They got the band that was on stage to get off, who they were very nice. They're like, yeah, let them take the stage for a couple songs. And we got up there and kind of just we back here in Colorado, we have not a band, but like we like to play together. We like
Love
to,
that.
there's like an open mic where I live, and that kind of started this whole thing of like, oh, let's play some songs together. And so we had a little bit of a repertoire to choose from just because we had practiced different songs. And it was such a blast. It was so fun. All of a sudden everyone's bringing chairs over, and Chris was so into it, and he did a phenomenal job. And honestly, I listened because I think Obstacle Running Adventures put the recording up on their podcast, and I listened back to it. I don't know if it was the audio or what. I personally don't think it sounded that good. I was
Oh,
like, oh no,
it did in person. It was
hopefully in person it
lovely
was
in
better.
person.
Thank you, thank you. But it was regardless, it was just such a unique experience. It's such a fun way to cap off the weekend. And yeah, that was like, I'll never forget it, absolutely.
I was just honestly, I can promise you it sounded really lovely. I love
Oh, thank you.
music. I'm not good at music, but I love it, and I enjoyed it. But I was kind of there like, she runs 90 miles and then she stands on stage and sings. These are two things I could never do.
Oh,
And it's so like, they're also such polar opposites in a way, because it was,
it's
you were
interesting,
singing so
yeah.
softly and gently, and
Yeah,
it
we
really,
sing sad songs only.
I wouldn't
But
say sad, I'd say, soft romantic. And it's like,
yeah,
that's not
true.
the kind
Okay.
of that's not the vibe you think you need for running 90 miles at World's Toughest Mudder, but I love it. I
So
love it.
true. Oh, thank
It
you.
was
Yeah, it was
great.
funny. I find I've always loved to sing, and I'm still working on stage presence and like not being extremely nervous on stage. And one thing I've learned is like trying to control your breathing is really hard when you're when your heart rate's up. So there was that aspect. Then the fact that we had both, like Chris and I had been out in the elements for like 24 hours the prior day. I'm like, my throat is not enjoying this.
No.
And then when you're so dehydrated and like depleted, I think I had one drink, but I was already like forgetting words because I had one drink after that whole 24-hour event. So it was a very fun kind of like, you know what, whatever, let's just go with the flow and like have a good time. And it was lots of smiles, lots of laughs. I enjoyed it a lot.
I love it. It's just kind of a recipe that you could never ever design or replicate, even to create
exactly.
that moment. And it's such
absolutely.
A nice aspect to such a special weekend.
Totally. Yeah. It's a kind of a once in a lifetime kind of thing.
Yeah,
I was
absolutely.
Just so blown away by it. It was just the perfect way to, I think explaining that event kind of is a good, I guess it like, it sums up the whole weekend very well in terms of what the vibe was, what, how special it was, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Definitely. Amazing. It was wonderful. It was wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I was planning to kind of talk more to you about like where you came from and more of your backstory, but I've had so much fun talking about World's Toughest Mudder that the time has passed.
Oh my gosh.
So
I'd be happy to chat again.
We'll
so
have to do it again
whenever.
And find out more about, you know, your origin story, whatever they say in superhero movies, because I'm sure there's plenty more to find out. But this is a really nice kind of really nice recap and understanding of what World's Toughest Mudder is, because so many people are never going to get a chance to do it. And it's
yeah,
so
no,
nice.
I'm always happy to talk about it. It's like, I mean, this race was dream come true. It's one of the best, like the coolest things I've ever done. So I will
yeah.
take any chance I could get to talk through it with people. And you do a phenomenal job with the show. It's awesome talking to you. So thank you for having me on.
My absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Good luck with your training and all your endeavors next year. And, you know, I'll be there in 2024 cheering you on.
And thank you so much. Yeah, I hope we cross paths in person again.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.